radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant. That's a G, yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
I've been traded for Paul. It's Branham and Joe. Joe and Branham. What sounds better, Branham and Joe or Joe and... I don't like going with my first name. Too many syllables. Branham and Joe or Joe and Branham. What sounds better? 713-780-3776. Or George and Branham or Branham and George. The options are limitless.
I think Branham and George.
Branham and George?
Yeah.
It's alphabetical.
Yeah, that does help.
It does help.
But so is Branham and Joe.
Yeah, that is also alphabetical.
I think Branham first makes more sense.
Branham and George? What do you think, AJ? AJ's got way more swag than we do. Way more swag than
Definitely.
You, especially.
Me?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got way more swag than... Well, I said both of us first.
Yeah, but why? How can you act like you have more than me?
I think I have slightly more swag than you.
Because you have a bunch of free Jordan stuff?
That helps.
It does.
That does help.
It does help.
Yeah, it does help. Yeah. So what do you think, AJ?
I like Branham and George.
Branham. Mm-hmm. You threw a little
Branham.
E in there.
I'm sorry.
Branham. Branham and George. All right, Branham and George.
Branham and George.
Because I'm struggling with this whole name thing. Branham and George. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I know, since I've been traded, I need to figure this out. I like D'Amico Ryans. Like, I think there's like one or two people on Twitter who are like, fire D'Amico. And then all these people are like, oh, my goodness. Oh, everybody's talking about firing D'Amico. Can you believe what these idiots are saying? I think it was like one random dude on Twitter. Like, let's pump the brakes on overreacting to some rando on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Just like to get the general idea of where the fan base is at. I don't think anybody rational, and I'm not including the Twitchers in this, anybody rational, I said, is calling for D'Amico's head. And I'm certainly not there. I like D'Amico. I think D'Amico, what he did with the culture, he's won back-to-back division titles. Titles coming from a team who won 11 games in 3 years. I'm very pleased with the trajectory of this organization. I might be sour on the ending of 2024, but I like where this organization's going under the direction of D'Amico. I think he's great with the culture. I think that the Texans are going to win a bunch of games with D'Amico Ryans as the head coach. There are multiple things that trigger me, though, that D'Amico Ryans does. The first one is, I hate how he handles his best players in garbage time. Like, I was livid the way that he handled his best players in garbage time against Minnesota. So much people are like, chill out, man. It's not that big a deal. And then Tank Dell got hurt. Like, why are you in the game down by 27? Why are starters in the game down by 27 at Minnesota? Same thing yesterday. Look, I didn't want him to play, but then once he makes the decision that, hey, we're going to play, okay, like, I can live with that idea. But you're getting hammered deep into the second half, like early fourth quarters when they pulled their starters. Like, he's leaving them in a game that has zero stakes, and you can make an argument that it helps them if they lose that game. So I cannot – and D'Amico's, like, pretty conservative with his players coming back from injury. He's kind of Dusty Baker-y, where he gives them an extra game, one more game after they're already ready to go. That way they're really ready to go. But in-game and garbage time, D'Amico might handle his starters worse than anybody in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's funny now. I've been like conditioned after working with you, you know, the last coming up on 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
That every single time it's a blowout and there's players.
What are they doing?
I think of you first.
What are they doing in the game?
No, I'm with you.
It's management.
Yeah, just get them out. Like they're throwing a bone to Netflix a little bit in the NFL, just like leaving your guys out there. But there's no reason to in a situation like that. And really, there's really no. Unless you're trying to figure something out offensively with Deontay Johnson, but I'm not convinced he'll even be active next week.
I think he'll be active.
Think so?
Oh, yeah. Why claim him?
I don't know, honestly.
Well, you're claiming him because he's Deontay Johnson's their second most talented receiver currently.
He definitely
on their
is
roster.
Now. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just such a disaster in Baltimore that, like, I was very pro trade for Deontay Johnson at the trade deadline, and then now I'm like, what happened in Baltimore?
Well, Baltimore doesn't have great demand for their wide receivers.
Yeah.
Like, they don't – I mean, they play a lot of 12 personnel. They throw to their tight ends a ton. They – like, he wasn't part of the game plan. They wanted him to go play. He was like, nah, I'm not checking in. So you fall out of favor there. Like, he's not – I mean, he would have been a fit there because I think he is talented. But he just wasn't going to be on the field as much as he wanted.
Yeah.
Whereas here, I think he can be.
I mean, he needs to be, first of all. Like, they're going to need him out there if they have any chance of having success in the playoffs. And the fact that he'll get to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, potentially, is the team that drafted him in the first round of the playoffs, should help. But, yeah, I don't get why. I'm with you 100%. Why are these guys out there when you're losing these games, when you've already lost Tank Dell and Jamie Ward and Jalen Petrie, and you're having to go through your, like, 20 something, you know, probably line combination of the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally with you. Like, just take him out.
And Stroud's over there rolling around in pain, getting hit every single snap.
Yep.
what are you doing in the game, man? Like, what is he doing in the game? So that's my first thing. The second one are these decisions to go for it, kick the field goal, punt. There was three plays in question, fourth down plays in the first half yesterday, in where you can talk about it. Like, it's a conversation. The first one, there's actually two on the same drive. This drive started with 10 minutes left to play in the second quarter, which was still a game. It was right after the safety, actually. You were down by one possession. It was an 8-point game after the safety. Damian Pierce had that big return where you ran over that corner, which might have been the play of the game. There's another positive. Damian Pierce bulldozing over a dude on special teams from Baltimore. So that drive starts first and 10 at your own 43. With 10 minutes to play in the first half, down by 8. Like, it's still a game at this point. There's another positive. It was not lost in the first quarter. It was still a game in the second quarter. I'm kidding, kind of. So you move the ball. You get into Baltimore territory. You're looking at a 4th-and-3 at the Baltimore 30, 7:17 left to play in the second quarter. This is one where I actually thought he was going to kick it because DeMeco kind of errs on the side of being conservative. And I would have been okay if they kicked it there because the offense was kind of sputtering. Like, the offense wasn't doing a whole lot. I would have kicked there. DeMeco went for it. What would you have done in that spot?
I think, like, we'll continue this, but, like, be who you are. I would have gone for it.
Who you are?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, know who you are.
Like, are you saying
Dan Campbell knows who he is?
Well, D'Amico's conservative.
But I don't think he is.
Oh, I completely disagree.
I think he flip-flops. I think he's a flip-flopper.
He does flip-flop.
Exactly. He's Brandon Staley, like, in a way like that.
But
like,
I think he errs on the side of being conservative.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely does. But I think he's – you got to know who you want to be as a coach. Mm-hmm. And I think you can either be Brandon Staley and, you know, be flip-flopping your decisions, whereas first year coaching the Chargers, they're going for two every time. They're going for every fourth down. And then the next year, they start changing everything. And then it ends up – he eventually gets fired because can't decide who he wants to be. You have Dan Campbell, who outside of the onside kick that he called, like, what was that, 2 weeks ago? He's always aggressive. He's always going to be aggressive.
Well, the onside kick was aggressive.
That was too aggressive.
It erred on the side of moronic, but it was aggressive. Like, it wasn't conservative moronic. It was aggressive moronic.
He knows who he is as a coach. He knows who he wants to be. He has no doubt in his mind. I don't think DeMeco knows the kind of coach that he wants to be in terms of how aggressive versus how conservative he wants to be. Because I think we've seen over the last 2 years.
No, I think it's unfair.
I don't think it is because just to me, like when it seems obvious he should kick it, I'm with you. Like, I would have gone for it. I thought they were going to kick it.
Yeah.
They go for it.
I think he coaches on vibes. I think he's kind of Dusty Baker, gut feeling, what's in Papa's belly. I think he goes based on vibe.
And maybe I don't like vibes.
Flow of the game. Yeah, it sounds to me like you're more of the Daryl Morey. What did he always say? Like, you either always hit or stay on 16 in blackjack.
Yeah.
Like, you always do one. You don't flip-flop between the two.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking, and I think that's kind of what you're alluding to. Like, Dan Campbell is always going to err on the side of aggression.
Yeah.
There are other coaches who always err on the side of being conservative. DeMeco, to me, while he is more conservative than aggressive, will make two exact same decisions differently at different points of the game.
And that drives me nuts.
Flow. I'm okay with vibes and flow, quite frankly, because I think with a lot of times with like the analytics and the computers do not account for is kind of flow of the game. Like if your offense is sputtering, the computers aren't really like they're not accounting for that. Like they're just looking at 4th-and-3 relative to every play in the history of the game.
Yeah,
like,
but how many games has this season have the Texans offense not sputtered?
But that would actually point to be more conservative. Like that would tell you that they should be more conservative. So I'm okay with vibes and flow of the game and that sort of thing. I really am, even though I'm a numbers guy. So I thought he was going to go for it there. He decided to – he just did. I thought he was going to kick it there. He decided to go for it. They called the pass interference, which I thought was a bad call. I thought it shouldn't have been pass interference. I thought the Texans got a huge break. Huge break there.
Yep.
So that was the first one. Later on in that series, after the pass interference, you had first and goal, which is another area the Texans have been atrocious this year. First and goal situations, they've been awful. They didn't score. They had a 4th-and-goal at the Baltimore 4. You going for it there? You kicking?
I'm going for it.
I'm go for it there. I would have kicked it 4th-and-3 at the Baltimore 30. I would have went for it 4th-and-goal at the Baltimore 4. Because even if you don't get it there, well, you give them bad field position, exactly. No big deal. Although Baltimore did have a 99-yard drive rather, after that. So he went for it twice on that series, right? DeMeco was asked after the game why he went for it twice on that series. Here was his answer.
Yeah, we went into the decision on 4th down. We needed to score. Right, we had some momentum going for us. We needed to score 7 to beat a team like this. Like, we're not going to beat them kicking field goals. So we needed to score 7. So that's why, you know, I decided to go for it.
Okay. I understand that, D'Amico. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm okay with those two decisions to go for it. Personally, I would have kicked the field goal, 4th and 3 at the Baltimore 30, but I'm not dying on that hill. Like, if you feel like you'd have to go for it, you need 7, not 3, totally understand. I'm with you on that, D'Amico. It's a coin flip decision for me. I have no issue with him going for it, 4th and goal at the Baltimore 8, or the Baltimore 4-yard line. So he does that down by 8 midway through the second quarter. Baltimore would have a 99-yard touchdown drive. It's now a 17-2 game. The Texans now have the football late in the first half. And D'Amico Ryans punts on a 4th and 2 at the Baltimore 43. How do you go from this D'Amico Ryans, play the clip for me once again, AJ, where he's talking about, here's the reason that I need to be aggressive. Here he was, D'Amico Ryans. Why are you so aggressive?
Yeah, we went into the decision on 4th down. We needed to score. Right, we had some momentum going for us. We needed to score 7 to beat a team like this. Like, we're not going to beat them kicking field goals. So we needed to score 7. So that's why, you know, I decided to go for it.
But you're going
to
beat them punting? Like, how do you go one series later, now down an extra 7 points, and now you're punting 4th and 2 at the 43? How do you go for it twice on 4th down, down by 8? We need touchdowns. We can't have field goals. Baltimore scores a touchdown. You're now down 15. And you're punting at 4th and 2 at the Baltimore 43. What? How does that make any sense?
That's what I mean. Like, that's why, like, it doesn't have any logic behind it. And I get by the idea of coaching by vibes, but your offense is sputtering nonstop. You're not having success. So what? You go 1 for 2 on 4th downs that previous possession. So what? Like, the missing the second one scares you off from doing it again? Like, are you coaching scared? I don't think so. But I just don't understand the logic behind it.
I think
it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, that, it was a very clear go for it again situation. You don't have to be Dan Campbell aggressive, where he's, you know, going for on 4th down so he can run the clock out and doing things like that. But this to me feels very obvious of how you've coached this game so far. Oh, you go for it again. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know how you answer the question. We knew we had to have touchdowns. Now we're down 7 more points. And it's okay. We can't have field goals, but we can have punts. We can have punts. It doesn't add up to me. And maybe, like, if you're trying to make sense of it, it's, I just don't trust my offense. And maybe that's the biggest tell of this whole thing, is that he doesn't trust his offense on a 4th and 2. But it just doesn't add up to me. And then if the whole field position thing, too, like, Baltimore on the very next play had a screen pass for 28 yards, and they're now at the 48. To, like, make matters worse. To make matters even worse, bad decision, lacks aggression. D'Amico, we need touchdowns, not field goals, but it's okay to punt, I guess. The very next play, Baltimore had a 28-yard gain, and now they're Baltimore 48 anyways.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I just don't get what his decision-making processes are for these 4th-down conversions, the 2-point conversions. And this is part of the reason why I was, like, light on Slowick last year. You go back to the very beginning of the year. I mean, they went for it on 4th down on the first possession of the D'Amico Ryans, Bobby Slowick, C.J. Stroud era against the Baltimore Ravens, and Bobby Slowick drew up some trash ass play, and it didn't get converted. Like I don't know if it's he doesn't trust Bobby, he doesn't trust C.J., but like, they also don't convert a lot of these, so maybe they shouldn't be aggressive. Maybe they should be playing more conservative. Yeah, but I find it so strange that you do go for it twice, and you don't go for the next time.
It would add up though. Like, if you kicked a field goal at the 30, wherever you were, then punting on the next series, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like that correlates. Going for it twice and then saying in your postgame, we need touchdowns, not field goals, does not correlate with punting at 4th and 3. Like, it makes no sense. There's also a Twitter handle called Surrender Index, where it tracks, like, the most cowardly punts of the season.
Yeah, I saw this.
The decision for D'Amico, and I said 4th and 3, it was actually 4th and 2. The decision to punt 4th and 2 with a 1:18 remaining while trailing by 15 points at a surrender index of whatever, the punt ranks as the 99.4th percentile of cowardly punts of the 2024 season. So this is one of the most cowardly punts we've seen this season. It is like, it's near the top. Mm-hmm. It is also in the 97th percentile of all punts since 1999. So that punt was one of the most cowardly punts of this century of NFL football. And who cares? They lost 31-2, right? Like, yeah, this didn't really influence the game one way or another. They go for it here. They convert. They're not going to magically win the game. But it does show the characteristic of a coach.
Yep.
It shows the characteristic of a coach who, quite frankly, is contradicting himself one series later. And that's what triggers me. That's what triggers me a little bit about D'Amico Ryans and his game management. Because whenever we point out this game management stuff and people are like, well, what are you talking about? When has he had poor game management? This is it. This is it. Who cares? They lost by 29. I know. But we're just putting it in your head.
Where do you think they rank on fourth down percentage conversion this year?
Just percentage relative to the NFL?
Yeah.
I don't know. Bottom third of the league?
They're 12th.
Okay, that's better than I thought.
62.5% of the time they convert on fourth down. They've converted.
That's pretty good.
They've gone for it 16 times.
And you're talking about percentage?
Yeah, percentage-wise, yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Now, they're towards the bottom of going for it, to your point. They are 21st in the NFL in terms of how many times
they've
gone.
Pure
attempts going for it on fourth down. So, I mean, he shows not very aggressive. Now, the highest team are the worst teams in the NFL, the Browns, the Bears, the Giants, the Panthers, Dolphins. The only team that's, relatively good is the Lions at sixth in the NFL. So, I guess he coaches more conservative.
He definitely is conservative.
But he's inconsistent with being conservative, and I think that's what annoys me the most.
I just hate it, the whole talking out of both sides of my mouth. When we're down by 8, we got to play for touchdowns. Now we're down by 15, and we're going to punt. And then you look at the metrics on it, it's one of the most cowardly punts we've seen in this century of NFL football. It does not make sense. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Joe's blaming somebody that you might not have seen blame following this loss. Who is Joe blaming? 713-780-3776. It is Branham and George on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Let's talk about ESPN Bet at La Berge in Lake Charles. They got the 24-foot video wall, 19 betting kiosks. As soon as you cross into Louisiana on your way to Lake Charles and on your way to La Berge, you can use the ESPN Bet app. No better time of the year to be going to hang out in a sports book. You got college football playoffs, the NBA. Christmas is over, so the NBA season's actually started. You can do all the different things you want to do. The food's great inside the sports book. Chef Lyle is always cooking up some incredible things. Definitely recommend the Hot Honey Sriracha Wings. They're very, very good. When you leave Texas and buy your Texas teams, make sure you do it at ESPN Bet inside La Berge in Lake Charles.
You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Agony on Twitter. It's Branham and George, by the way. I've been traded for Paul Gallant. Agony says, can we talk about how late in the play clock it takes Slowick to get the plays or subs in? Yeah, that's super annoying. It's a sign of a bad offensive flow, bad offensive system. I don't know how much of that is on Slowick or how much of that is on Stroud, though. I think it's a combination of the two.
Yeah, it's the function of your offense is not good. And that's a huge problem. And that's why I think I would fire Bobby Slowick. I don't think it's even really a conversation that should be difficult to have, honestly, for anyone inside the organization. Something has to change pretty drastically.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still thinking about that. I'll let you know in 30 minutes. Who are you blaming for yesterday?
Nick Caserio.
Okay. Why? Why are you blaming Nick Caserio? Okay.
You look at the problems with the Texans, the offensive line. You said it earlier. They improved at right guard with Kendrick Green.
Yeah.
That's a joke. That's incredible. You've got a right tackle and Blake Fisher who he'll be fine. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, you're biased to the Notre Dame people.
I am. I am for sure. But you had a problem at left guard. You didn't recognize it this offseason. You chose to ignore and roll Kenyon Green out there. We all knew that he was not a good player. You didn't want to bail on him. You re-signed Dalton Schultz, who is walking around on the field. He's not a quality player for you this year. And that's the decision-making you made on tight end. You also have doubled down on Brevin Jordan, bringing him back again for next year, a guy who is often injured. You have Stephon Diggs coming off a poor season who got hurt. Tank Dell, I'm fine with the wide receiver process, but it looks bad now at this point. Your cornerbacks, you let Jeffrey Okuda be your third guy. So we knew as soon as there was an injury, they were screwed. And here we are. They're screwed. You ignored your safety position outside of Kalen Bullock. We knew that Jimmy Ward wasn't good. Instead of, moving on from Jimmy Ward, you extended him as well to where Eric Murray is your primary safety at this point with Kalen Bullock. And while Nick Caserio has done a good job with some of the pieces on this team is fundamentally flawed. I think we all kind of didn't realize it in the moment. They went all in this offseason. I think it's kind of clear now that they've made a mistake. And you look at the flaws of this team and where they're at offensively and defensively, a lot of them are decisions that Nick Caserio made in the offseason.
Yeah. I think that Caserio's actually built a good team. I think a lot of things have went against him, though. Like, you mentioned the offensive line. What was he supposed to do with the offensive line? Like, he drafted an offensive lineman in the second round of the draft. Like, Shaq Mason was solid last year. Yep. There's no reason to think that Shaq Mason wouldn't have been a solid right guard this year. Like, maybe you could have brought in a veteran at left guard, but maybe that was part of the decision in drafting Blake Fisher, that if Kenyon Green does not work, well, we can have Jared Patterson in the mix, Juice Scruggs would be in the mix there, Titus Howard can move to left guard because we're drafting another offensive lineman in the second round. So I feel like Caserio addressed the offensive line. Now, he might have missed a lot of times, like Kenyon Green, the draft pick there was not a good one. Like, how cool would it be to not trade down, or even to trade down further and draft Linderbaum, who's with Baltimore. Like, that would have been awesome. I don't know if I want to call Shaq Mason a miss, though, because he was good last year.
No,
he got up for a late-round pick swap.
I don't think it's a total miss. It's more about center and left guard that are your bigger problems. I think it's fair to say.
I think your left guard play has been really good the last couple of weeks.
You can't run the ball.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that Titus Howard's the reason that you can't run the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I'm an offensive line guy. I just look at like a lot of Pro Football Focus stuff for that, and you look at his, whenever they grade him out as a pass blocker, it's usually pretty solid, whether he's at left guard or right tackle, and it's always a little bit lesser.
I don't know if I disagree with a lot of what Nick Caserio has done. I think the way that you kind of paint the picture, it's a lot of things that kind of didn't go right, though. Like, extending Dalton Schultz in hindsight is a miss. And I didn't love it at the time either, because I thought that you could have found a tight end that was comparable, probably for a little bit cheaper, and probably would have been better this year, because Dalton Schultz has not been good. The offensive line, I going into the offseason, I'm not sure that there's anything that I would have rather done, though, if I eliminate the hindsight part of it. Because you did add an offensive line to the mix.
Yeah, I think it was clear, like, they thought adding Joe Mixon. And at times it has this. A lot of times it has.
I thought that was a great move.
I agree. It was a great move. And he's the only reason why I think now, when we look more, you know, 20-foot view on this season, I think we're going to think more of the Joe Mixon was doing a lot of this work for the offensive line.
Sure.
And he was making the plays, not the offensive line. So specifically more with the run game is the issue with the O-line. So it's not that they are – I mean, look, CJ's also been sacked the second most times in the NFL.
Yeah, some of that's year. On him.
I think it is being wildly ignored how much that is on him.
Yeah, a lot of it's – I mean, I wouldn't say – I don't know how much a lot. I think there's more now than there was at the start of it.
Yeah.
Because I think him getting beat up is kind of what's led to him taking more sacks, ironically.
Totally agree.
Because I don't think he trusts his offensive line, so he's a little tentative. And then, you know, good quarterback play between average quarterback play is one on the margins. It's so razor thin. But I don't blame Caserio for this roster build. I actually thought he did a good job. You could point to the Diggs trade as one that isn't great. Like, I would love to have that extra second rounder as opposed to Diggs, but the element of hindsight there. Like, the hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him for the wide receiver room. I just think, like, the flaws of this team were very obvious going into the season, specifically within the secondary. And
I mean, you drafted a guy in the second round, though.
I mean, look, no, Lassiter and Bullock have been great, but your depth was still a problem. I mean, Jimmy Ward was still a problem. Jalen Petrie, who I love as a player, is a guy who's often injured, and you put him in a different position this year where he excelled.
I thought he was good there.
I thought he was good in the run game.
Sure. He wasn't great in coverage, but I mean,
you kind of take the good with the bad with that, right?
Sure. But I feel like he was better there than he was at safety.
No, I totally agree. He was much better in that
situation. And Jimmy Ward's better there than he is at safety.
100%. But now you've lost both of them, and not that like you have to have, you know, all this depth across the team, but my biggest thing this offseason was that they needed another corner, another safety, and another running back. And it's not
well, I mean, they answered all those things, Joe. They drafted corner, they drafted safety.
Besides what they got.
So you would have liked more of them.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could have brought another safety. I mean, you have three guys already there that you're counting on.
You don't think Justin Simmons would have worked here?
But it's also costly.
It wasn't that costly.
But what do you do if you bring in Simmons? Like, what are you doing with Ward? What are you doing with Murray?
I would have cut Jimmy Ward.
Yeah, the extension is curious. I agree with
that.
Yeah,
I don't love it.
Like, I don't hate going into this year with Jimmy Ward because he was already on the contract, but the extension of Jimmy Ward doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I just think, like, when you look at, like, obviously, this game mostly is on D'Amico and on CJ, of course, but I just think the roster itself is now in a position where they are fundamentally flawed in a lot of ways.
But every NFL team is.
Yeah, but
salary cap league, every team's going to be flawed.
Yeah, but they've strapped themselves in a little bit, I think, with, like, you look at cap space next year, where they're at, and how much, like, needs to be fixed. So I'm like, I'm not so convinced that they can fix it.
No, I do think that they're going to be more constrained next offseason coming up than they were this past offseason.
Yeah, they're going to have to win in the margins. But I'm not sure he's a GM to do that.
No, I think he can find some guys. I think I like Caserio's GM. I like a serious GM. Now, there's some things that you can do that you point at that you're like, okay, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I don't love that. But every GM's going to miss. No GM's going to get everything right.
No, he's been, and for the most part in the draft, he's been incredible. I mean.
Except for offensive linemen.
Yes. Yeah. And that's where even like I'm a Blake Fisher fan. Because I don't know how you feel about Patterson and Scruggs at this point. I'm not really a believer. I mean, I think, like, yeah, I know, Notre Dame bias. I think I like Patterson more than Scruggs.
Scruggs, it's tough because Scruggs doesn't get you in the right coverages, and he's a better center than he is guard. So he's probably a below-average guard. He's probably an above-average center, but he might be unplayable at center because he doesn't get you in the right coverages.
Yeah, which is weird because, like, and sometimes, like, people are obviously just, like, uneducated, even though they're supposed to be on television, paid a ton of money to do it. I saw Dan Orlovsky tweeting stuff about C.J. Stroud and the offense and blaming C.J. for some of the sacks that happened in the Chiefs game because the quarterback didn't change the protection. It's not his job.
Yeah.
Like, it's not his job. It's the center's job.
I mean, there's quarterbacks that will do it.
I don't know if C.J.'s allowed to.
I'm talking about generally speaking, not the Texans. I'm with you on that. But like Peyton Manning's going to get his teams into the right coverages.
I mean, Caleb Williams tries.
Yeah.
Like he's called, like, they're calling, like, you see rookie quarterbacks all the time call their own protection. The Texans, for whatever reason, CJ does not do it. I don't know why, but.
I think you're kind of alluding to the reason as to why.
Low S Tui?
I didn't say it.
I'm kind of, I have CJ take regret.
What do you mean?
I am one of those that, like, I regret the heights in which we elevated him. Into a top five quarterback this year.
See, I think he has top five potential. I really do. I still do.
I agree with that, but I think we elevated him way too fast.
Yeah, we probably took that extra step before he actually proved it.
And that was like making me struggle with like what I want to do with Jaden Daniels this offseason.
Yeah.
Like how high I want to put him. Because I feel the same way about Jaden that I did about CJ, honestly, maybe a little bit better.
Yeah, but
honestly.
He's got Cliff.
Yeah.
CJ's got Slowick. All right, 713-780-ESPN. 10-minute drill coming up next. It is Branham and George on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. Football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
Branham is in for Paul. I've been traded for Paul. This texter says, please tell me y'all didn't swap Branham on the drive home for Paul, who I frequently change the station when I hear his voice. It's so horrible choice. Is that I think it's insulting to Paul, but it might be me?
No, I think it's to Paul.
Okay, I couldn't tell. I'd prefer if it was an insult to me, quite frankly. I always get uncomfortable whenever people text the show and insult others. If you're going to insult people, insult me. Insult the people that are on the air. Say it to their face, kind of.
Bull crap.
Keyboard warrior to their face.
You guys read all the mean stuff about me on your guys' show.
Yeah, but I prefer it when they're mean to me.
Okay.
Well, I'm not going to say we're not going to read it. I just read that one. But I prefer for the texters to have the courage of being mean to the host.
Do you think Paul and Joel would kill each other?
What do you mean?
I think we're going to find out. I think they would drive each other.
What's the over-under for Paul and Blankers to kill each other now that we've been traded, Paul and I?
I'm going to say 3.5 days.
Yeah, it won't take long. It won't take. Maybe by the end of next week. It's not going to take long.
Paul's not back till like the 6th.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll go the 12th. I'll go under the 12th of January. Yeah, no doubt. All right. You don't want to see Wednesday games ever again?
Nope. Good. Don't need it. Didn't like it. I get what the NFL's trying to do. Don't need it. I don't need Tuesday games. I don't need Wednesday games. I didn't hate it. Like I don't know. There's nothing going on in the world during the pandemic when they. The one game got pushed back to a Tuesday, but I don't never need this again. I don't need Wednesday games, and I'm sure they will next year. They'll put Wednesday games on Christmas Eve next year.
On Christmas Eve? Yeah. I feel like this was a one-off for Christmas.
I don't know. I don't need it. I don't need Black Friday games.
I kind of liked it because it was Christmas, but I would get rid of Thursday games. I don't like midweek games.
Yeah, I think it's. And you got to think Amazon would still pay for some broadcast. Honestly, I'd rather them turn Thursday Night Football into Saturday Night Football.
That's fine by me.
Like, I just don't need, like, the midweek
stuff. I think it's hard on the players, too.
Yeah.
I think it's bad. I think it's really bad for the player.
Yeah. I'd rather just them go, you know, play Sunday to Saturday versus Sunday to Thursday. And it's just as a fan, like, not to, like, woe is me, because I saw some of that. A couple of ones that were, like, really funny. People being very overdramatic about how, like, now, like, their life is consumed by football because it's their job.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah, my wife doesn't love it.
Mine doesn't either. So I just watched the game at like 1 o'clock in the morning on 5-speed last night.
Yeah, it was probably a good way to watch it.
But yeah, I just don't need it. I don't need Wednesday football. And I know the NFL eventually feels like they're going to try to do a game every day.
Yeah, I don't think so. That'd be hard for fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think that they placate to the fantasy community.
See, I think that's why the auto sub thing is starting to come in. Have you experienced that yet?
Yeah, no, we're not going to go in the weeds here on that.
Well, if you don't know, so you can set an auto sub that player.
Yeah,
can
I know. I know.
Yeah, I don't love it.
Okay. I just don't think the listener loves to hear us talk about it.
I don't know. People like fantasy football.
I don't think they love the auto sub aspect. You want to break down the X's and O's of the auto sub on the Sleeper Fantasy app?
No, I'm just saying. It's a player gets hurt on Sunday. You put in someone who played on Thursday. I think it's stupid.
I'm with you on Wednesday night football. I get rid of Thursday night football, but I like holiday football. Like a holiday, if you want to make the exception to have weekday football because it matches up with a holiday, I'm all for it. So get rid of Thursday night football. And then when you want some holiday football in the middle of the week, go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
But it's weird, though, because then, like, didn't 2 years ago, on Christmas, they did the opposite, where they played two games on Christmas, and then everyone else played on Christmas Eve?
I think it's something like that.
Like, they went, like, all Saturday games, and then it was It's very strange. But the NFL does what the NFL wants.
Well, also, Netflix played, what, $150 million to have them on?
Yes, they did.
Just two games. So, like, that probably was a huge reason why. I thought Netflix was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was way better than the debacle of Tyson Paul.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, they start Monday Night Raw next week, which obviously there'll be more viewers for football than wrestling, and way more viewers for the Jake Paul Mike Tyson disaster than these games. But they also signed a deal with the Women's World Cup, so like they've got a lot of stuff. They had to get this right, kind of.
Yeah, I don't think they're good. Yeah, Aaron in Mid County says, "Isn't the Netflix deal for three Christmases?" I didn't know that.
Well, they put next year Christmas is on a Thursday, and the next year, the year after that, should be on a Friday, I guess. So
they got the next three Christmases?
Yeah. Makes sense.
I wonder if Netflix is going to try to be a major player in sports broadcasting.
I saw someone suggest that they've already, like, this is their path to the Super Bowl.
Really? That'd be kind of legit.
I mean, think about it, but they're going to have.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
They have Christmas Day football. They've done live streaming events, which were a disaster. They of a Women's World Cup, which like does matter to a lot of people.
Some.
And they have, you know,
define a lot.
The longest running cable television show in the history of cable.
The Simpsons?
Is now going to Netflix. WWE Raw.
That's been one longer than The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Kansas City clinches the top seed in the AFC. Do you think anybody dethrones them in the AFC this year?
Yes.
Really?
I don't know who yet, but I'm gonna say yes.
It could be Lamar's year. Look, if Zay Flowers doesn't fumble the ball towards the end zone last year, it might have been last year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to, like, bet on it, because that feels like I would never bet against Patrick Mahomes.
Same.
But I'll probably pick Baltimore or Buffalo to go Super Bowl this year.
Okay.
I mean, I think whoever, I mean.
I've had a take that Josh Allen's never going to win a Super Bowl, so hopefully it's not Buffalo.
Yeah, you're going to stand on that one for a while.
Forever, until it happens.
Yeah, and then you're stuck.
And then I'll be like, I was wrong.
Yeah.
You pay me for my looks, not my brilliance.
I mean, look, sometimes like you have long-term bets that you get screwed on, so you never know. I lost a bet this year because Forrest Whitley pitched for one inning for the Astros.
Should have made the bet.
No, I said he'll never pitch for the Astros.
Should have made the bet.
He got one out.
He's going to be a key figure in their bullpen next year.
Mm-hmm.
Until he gets hurt.
Heard that for 5 years now?
No, he's just been a reliever for 1 year.
That's true.
Lamar Jackson, greatest dual threat quarterback of all time.
Yes.
Passed Mike Vick for the most rushing yards ever.
Been past Michael Vick.
Yeah, he's already been past him.
He's a way better thrower. Michael Vick will be the greatest runner of the football as a quarterback ever see.
I don't think that can be said anymore.
I think Michael is just still so much more dynamic.
So it's kind of like Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith type of deal?
Yeah.
Like Emmitt Smith has the accolade, Sanders was more dynamic?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think it's close. Well, I really do.
I think it's close, too, but maybe it's more like Barry and Walter than Barry and Emmitt.
Yeah. Like, I think it's close. Their styles are just a little different.
Yeah,
I
mean,
but Lamar's an unbelievable runner with the ball.
Yeah, I'm biased for the head coach of Norfolk State, Michael Vick. But
it's not going to work.
It's definitely not going to work.
Not going to work. Like, people were trying to compare him to Deion. Like, Deion was coaching in high school and, like, worked his way up.
No, it's probably going to be closer to Ed Reed, who quit after, like, a day.
He was a head coach?
Yeah, he was a head coach, and then, like, he just totally had to, like, put the equipment away, and he quit.
I thought he was, like, the CEO of culture.
I mean, like, it's worked great for, like, Eddie George.
Eddie George's been good.
State.
Yeah, he's been good.
Wouldn't surprise me if he moves up at some point, but, like, I don't think the Michael Vick thing will work.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing that work. Pete Carroll, interested in the Bears job? How would you feel about that as a Bears fan?
Not great. I mean, like, if it was, like, the fifth option, I guess, like, you're stuck with it. But he's been a below 500 coach his last 3 years in the NFL. It's a big name, but I don't need it. It's Ben Johnson, Joe Brady, and Mike Vrabel. Those are the best three choices.
Joe Brady?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
I think we got to give him a pass for Carolina.
What about Cliff?
Hell no.
You don't want Cliff?
No, because now Jaden figured it out last week, but you saw the Jaden Daniels typical offensive regression from Cliff Kingsbury's offenses, where after 6 weeks it falls off a cliff. Now, he figured it out last week, but it also was a grind to beat Kenny Pickett and the Eagles. So I'm not a big Cliff guy. I don't believe.
Yeah, I think he's a great OC. I don't know how I said that. That was funny. I think he's a great OC.
Yeah.
I can never replicate that again if I try.
No, I don't think you could.
He's a great OC, not a good head coach.
Yeah, I have no interest in Cliff Kingsbury as the head coach.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I'm not sure he'll be a head coach again.
How do you feel about the trade for Shanahan thing?
I'm not giving up the ninth pick in the draft. So if it was...
Oh, yeah, it's way too much.
If they have 2 second-round picks this year, theirs and Carolina's.
Would you trade D'Amico for the ninth pick of the draft?
Hell no.
I would. Are you talking about from a Bears perspective or a Texans perspective?
You're right. Let me answer this two ways. As a Texan,
and then I hire Ben Johnson.
As a Texans season ticket holder, yes, I would trade D'Amico Ryans for the ninth pick.
Why not?
As a Bears fan, hell no. Hell no.
So I think it's obvious that you would trade D'Amico if you were from a Texans perspective.
Yeah.
If you're saying yes on the Texans angle and no on the Bears angle, it's a no brainer.
Yeah, it's the ninth pick, and you can hire Ben Johnson. Yeah.
Speaking of the Eagles, Noah, it looks like Jalen Hurts is trading not to play, which is the norm for concussions nowadays.
Yeah, and then the Eagles signed Ian Book today, so they're even a little bit worried about Kenny Pickett's health. But he was out there throwing balls today. So
really,
yeah,
is he still wearing the gloves?
I don't remember if he was wearing the gloves this weekend or not.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But you can't be a real quarterback if you wear gloves.
That's not true. Yes. Peyton Manning wore gloves.
When he was, like, old and cold.
The greatest quarterback of all time.
Kenny Pickett wore them warming up for the combine inside a hotel.
He needed a grip.
He has small hands.
He did have small hands. He still does. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What's wrong with C.J. Stroud? What's wrong with this offense? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
No Paul today. We have to work on that imaging. I've been traded for Paul, so I'm in with Joe. Branham and George, I think, is what we're going to call it. Texter, Lamar Jackson 1, Randall Cunningham 2. Josh Allen might be number 2. Greatest dual threat quarterbacks, Josh Allen might be 2nd.
Yeah, I think he can get there.
Who else would you have ahead of Josh Allen's dual threat quarterbacks? Randall Cunningham or Josh Allen?
I never saw Randall play. So
Mike, you didn't play with him on Tecmo Bowl?
Still before my time.
Really? Man, you're young. What about
I turned 33.
Mike Vick, Josh Allen. Josh Allen.
Josh Allen's a better passer.
Josh Allen's the 2nd best dual threat quarterback of all time.
Yeah, because like
behind Lamar.
If Vick is so tough because if he was Eagles, if he had Andy Reid his whole career, I wonder what he would have been. Because he was, but then also I think he had to go to jail to like kind of get his head on straight in terms of like learning like playbooks and things like that. Because he's talked about that where he didn't really know everything that was going on in Atlanta. But what he was as a quarterback in Philadelphia is some of the most fun I've ever had watching football. He was awesome.
But it was only 1 year really. Like he had the 1 year of like peak dominance and then that was it. It was kind of weird. But Andy Reid obviously would have helped him. Andy Reid's been helping quarterbacks his whole life. 713-780-ESPN. Why would anyone want to be mean to you, Branham? I can think of a reason or two. Another texture, Christmas Day is for NBA or a bowl game. Did you watch any NBA yesterday?
Yeah, I'm sure the ratings will tell you that it's for the NBA.
Yeah. The ratings are going to speak a whole lot when it comes to the NBA and NFL. AJ raised his hand. You watched a little hoops yesterday, AJ?
I mean, I'm an NBA fan first, so, man. But I love football, too, but... Y'all have that LeBron thing on the rundown later.
We'll talk about it a little bit later.
I would have had, you know, the Rockets play on Christmas.
But. Right. Yeah.
It would have been fun. I wonder if they will get a Christmas Day game next year.
I would actually. Rockets. I bet you they will.
Depends on their playoffs, I think.
I don't know, man. Like, they're kind of up and coming.
Yeah, but if they miss the playoffs or if they get ousted in the first round, they're not going to be that appealing.
Yeah, the worst team in the NBA, like one of the worst teams in the NBA was on Christmas Day yesterday.
Who?
Spurs.
Yeah, but they have Victor.
Yeah, I know.
They have a marketable player. The Rockets really don't.
That's true. They don't have that.
They really don't have a marketable player.
Yeah. And I mean, look, and that's how the NBA did the Bucks this year. They didn't put Giannis and Dame on Christmas Day because of that. So,
well, that's kind of weird because Giannis is marketable.
So is Dame.
Not as marketable.
I mean,
Giannis.
He's one of the highest voted all-star players every year.
Really?
Yeah.
Dame? Mm-hmm. Dame. All right, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? Jeremy, I have to disagree with you on your take with Caserio. I know that's a surprise. And Joe, I agree with you. He's done a good job, like, being objective. He's done a good job, but he has not done a great job. And I just want to point out a few things. So, Kenyon Green should not have been on this roster. Like, Kenyon Green has not demonstrated that he's actually, like, an NFL-level offensive lineman. He hasn't been good. He rolled with him this year, and we suffered. Just a few examples. How does this team look with Linderbaum at guard, or even or if we have Brian Thomas as a wide receiver, like instead of Stephon Diggs, which we traded our pick, right? So that's what separates us from being like
it was a different pick. It was a different pick for Diggs, though. Like the Texans traded future pick. They traded the Vikings pick next year.
Yeah, but we initially had a first round pick, mm-hmm. which we traded to the Vikings for the extra second round pick. And if we wouldn't have traded the first round,
but
pick,
you also wouldn't have you also wouldn't have Kamari though. You wouldn't have, like, it's not the whole story. It wasn't Diggs or Brian Thomas Jr. It was Diggs and Kamari or Brian Thomas Jr.
I got it. I guess what I'm trying to say is like Kamari. Yes, he's a good player, right? But Caserio's decisions, right? Like, there's no way we can absolve him from the fact that our O-line is the biggest issue with this team. Like, the decisions have led us to this point. So, once again, I think he's good, but you, like, absolving him of everything, I don't think that's right. I kind of lean with Joe.
Did I do that, though?
He has to take some blame.
Did I absolve him of everything? Because I thought I said he did a good job with his roster. I don't know if I said he did a great job with his roster. Like, I feel... And maybe I did, Gary. We can go back and, like, check the tape on, like, the semantics of it. But I don't really disagree with you. Like, I feel like we're pretty close on our opinion of Nick Caserio.
It's possible. This has always been a sticking point of mine. Somehow I think people think he walks on water, which he is good.
Right.
I think what separates us from Kansas City is they make great decisions where we make good ones, and that leads us to be where we're at and they're where they're at.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that they're a better coach. Appreciate the call, Gary. I would say that Kansas City's definitely better coach than the Texans. Like, Linderbaum way better than Kenyon Green. But I wonder what Kenyon Green would look like with Baltimore coaching. Like, that to me is kind of like the lost element. And the reason that it's a lost element is because we can't see it. Like, we have no idea what it would look like.
Yeah, I do think, like, coming out, I remember people saying he couldn't pass block.
Yeah.
So,
And he played tackle in college.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not... And Linderbaum, like, yeah, I agree. I mean, I would rather have Kyle Hamilton than Kenyon Green. Like, there's a bunch of guys I'd rather have than Kenyon Green. That going back
to the draft that night. That draft class is actually, like, late first round is pretty dang good of offensive linemen. Like, it kind of ticks me off, quite frankly, whenever I look at it. So, like, I agree with Gary to that point. And I think Caserio is good, not great. I'm comfortable with Caserio as the general manager of the Houston Texans. I think you can do far worse. Do I think he's like walking on water, like Gary said? I don't think that Nick Caserio walks on water. And when you look at specifically the Kenyon Green pick, like Zion Johnson went to the Chargers late, like at 17. Tyler Smith even to the Cowboys at 24 has been pretty good. Tyler Linderbaum went 25th to the Baltimore Ravens. Like Cole Strang, remember he was a reach for the Patriots.
Yep.
He's been kind of banged up, so he's been a little harder to grade. But I think that would have been better than Kenyon Green. I think that Caserio actually has flaws, and I think that he has holes in his game. See, I hesitate to say this because I want to know how much of this is coaching. Like, is Nick Caserio just bad at identifying offensive linemen, or is his offensive line coaching just really bad? Like, if he had Baltimore's O-line coach or Kansas City's O-line coach, would his offensive linemen look better than they look right now?
Well, I think we have to find out. I think Bobby Slowik should be fired this offseason, but priority number one is getting a new offensive line coach, getting someone that's actually coached in this scheme before,
mm-hmm.
which they don't have right now, which is a terrible hire, whether that's D'Amico's decision or Bobby's decision or Nick's decision. That's a terrible hire. And honestly, it's something they should have probably done before this. Like, I don't need Cole Popovich. I don't know what he's doing on this roster. He's been here for a while as an assistant coach on this team. They need a new offensive line coach. And if we don't see immediate improvement, then I think that'll give us a bigger picture about what Caserio's done.
Right.
But like, they need to make a change. That change has to be made.
I do think Caserio has a hole in identifying offensive linemen. I think he struggles with that. And I think you can look across the offensive line and see that. A lot of people thought he reached for Juice, who he says himself, not that long ago, is better as a center than a guard, but he's almost unplayable as a center. Titus Howard's contract extension was way too much money for a right. He paid him top five right tackle money at the time. He's not a top five right tackle. And right now he's not even playing right tackle for you. He's playing guard. Jared Patterson was probably his best find, like a six rounder that's actually serviceable. Maybe below average, but serviceable. Shaq Mason was fine, but that's a veteran, wasn't a draft pick. And then Blake Fisher, the jury's still out. Like, he hasn't been great as a rookie. He's been like kind of okay. And you're certainly not judging a rookie based on their first year.
And he was not a polished product. I mean, anywhere near like what people like. I mean, obviously, like they're like different rounds, but. Uh-huh. Compared to him, to his teammate last year, Joe Alt, who's with the Chargers, like it's night and day. Like Jared Patterson's a 2-year project.
I don't want Nick Caserio to draft offensive linemen anymore. Like, that's where I'm at. Like, I want him to just sign veterans or like trade for them, like he traded for Shaq Mason, because he has not been great at drafting offensive linemen. Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs, maybe he's already in that boat. Blake Fisher, probably too early to tell, but he hasn't been like an instant impact starter. Like, it took him a while, and he's kind of been iffy there. But I think he's really good at drafting players in the secondary. Like, mm-hmm. Kamari Lasseter, really good. Kalen Bullock, third rounder, really good. He took Stingley over Sauce and got crucified for a year for taking Stingley over Sauce. And right now it's majorly in favor of Derek Stingley.
Honestly,
I think receivers, Nico Collins traded up for him in the third. Tank Dell, yes, he's injury prone, traded up for him in the third.
I'm not going to blame him for Mechie. Like, Mechie's been a good draft pick for what he's had to overcome.
That's probably two different conversations whenever you talk John Mechie, right?
That's why I think what you've gotten out of John Mechie, like, it's not his fault. I think he was a great pick coming into the draft. I was very pro John Mechie when they made that decision. So I'm not going to ding Nick Caserio in any way, shape, or form for what you've actually gotten out of the player, because it's just not his fault.
I think he struggles often identifying good young offensive linemen in the draft. Yep. But at the same time, if everybody's talking about how poorly the offensive line is coached, that would kind of excuse Caserio a bit on that specific topic.
It does.
Not that I'm excusing him. I'm just saying you can't, on one hand, say that the offensive line coaching is atrocious and then blame Nick Caserio for drafting bad offensive linemen. Like, they kind of correlate. And I would say that Caserio is good, not great. I actually agree with what Gary's points. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. Let's get into the issues with C.J. Stroud, the problems with this offense. 713-780-3776. It is Branham and George on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.